And you're very welcome back in studio with me are four foresters. Gentlemen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you doing?
Thanks so much for coming in. So who are you?
We're four foresters from Letterkenny, County Donegal. We're an experimental folk rock band, you could say.
Yeah.
My name's Gabriel. This is Gary and Connell.
And what do you do in the band, Gabriel?
I play the guitar and I sing and I write the songs, and then the boys play drums and bass.
And how long have you been playing together?
About 6 years. We've sort of grown up playing together. It sort of started out as a hobby, but we're starting to take ourselves a wee bit more seriously now, and sort of looking at it as a career path.
Yeah, because you've had quite a bit of success and exposure, haven't you? Tell us about them.
Last year, I suppose, was a turning point for us. We played the Other Voices Music Trail, and the reaction from that was brilliant. It was the first time that we sort of saw ourselves as a real, real band that had a real shot.
Yeah.
And I sort of snowballed after that.
Was that like a eureka moment? Like, did you turn to look at each other and say, lads, look, we're not just three young fellas trying different things here. There might be something here.
What do you think, boys?
Just sort of took off from it there, like.
You could have gone down a more commercial path, maybe. I presume you're all talented musicians that could bang out anything if you wanted to, but you have a very specific sort of, not very specific, but it's niche almost, isn't it?
I do definitely know what you're saying. I kind of think that's what it was. We were kind of writing songs for other people that like us for a while, and once we started sort of writing songs for ourselves, people started to like them. Because I think there's... definitely for me, I didn't like when we were writing songs that didn't really have a lot of meaning, but now...
You know, when you're writing songs about I broke up, love, this, that, and the other, or, you know, it can be what rhymes with love
exactly,
sort of a situation,
No, it has to be... once you write a song about something that means something to you, you can sort of deal with those emotions when you're playing, and you don't have to deal with them in life,
Yeah, so there's a guitar, there's a name for it, I can't remember what it is, but you hear it quite and again, but it's almost like a therapy.
That definitely as well, it feels like.
And so what do you write about then? I mean, you do all the writing, or do you let the guys have a say, or what?
The ideas would come from myself, and then we'd just sort of all sit around.
It's been described as lyrical narratives. Break that down for a dumbo like me.
when I started to get into music, I sort of heard a lot of folk singers, and just the stories fascinated me. And I kind of tried to look into my own life then and find out what in my own life that I could write about that would be interesting. As you know, myself and Dad do the funerals, and I think that was the most interesting thing I could find in my life. And I started writing a lot about that. And then, obviously, the other things, the cliches like teenage life.
They aren't cliches, though, because they're real, and, say going through your teenage years, it's very subjective, do you know what I mean? And even though there's millions of people doing it at the exact same time, it's often through music and through the headphones, though, that people can twig and say, this guy understands what I'm going through. So, you can have a class of teenagers and every single one of them are having an individual experience.
That's definitely true. I think you sort of... It's definitely for teenage life. I think it's the same with songwriting. I mean, you sort of have to make sure you write about something when you're going through it, because you'll sort of, it'll escape you if you don't document it.
Yeah, so, and poetry, I read here that you're working on new music, poetry and film to be released alongside Andromeda Artisans. What's that about?
It's a music collective that we set up in Donegal. Mark Black was the first person to approach us about it, and it's a collective of clans in their thousands, our native state and colour sound and different bands that get there, and it's kind of sort of making sure the artist gets everything out of their music that they've put into it, so there's no sort of big record label taking all your money for the work you've done. It's very much a homegrown sort of, you're getting back what you've put in, and everything is centred around the artist keeping their...
So, Connell or Gary, you can take this one. You're young guys, but who would you see as your audience, or who do you find likes your music most?
Oh, many are friends, like sort of.
So your peer group, if you know what I mean. So you are bringing sort of folk traditional music to a younger generation, is that it?
That's what we're trying to really.
Did I say traditional? It's not traditional as such, is it? But anyway. Mm. So you're going to perform a couple of songs for us. What are you going to play first?
First I'm going to play My Fella the Undertaker. It's probably the first song I wrote about doing funerals.
Mm.
And then
it's a morbid title.
It is a morbid title, but I think
sometimes you just have to say, well, this is actually what it is.
Exactly,
you know what
I mean?
There's no point cherry coating it.
It's definitely something that we try to keep in our music.
Yeah.
And then the second one is La Morgue, and it's again about the funerals and sort of seeing two people that never met each other in life, but they were together in death.
And is it upbeat, downbeat? How would you describe it?
I'd consider it upbeat. I don't think anybody else would.
Well, death is part of life.
I think some people are kind of too scared to talk about it, but once you do talk about it,
I'm
it
sorry
becomes
if you,
a happy thing.
You've been raising it, but sure. All right, guys, well, sure, make your way around what we'll do is we'll hear from you in a couple of minutes. You can batter on in there. Okay, we're going to be hearing from Four Foresters very, very shortly. Just a reminder what else is coming up on the programme, still between now and 12 o'clock. We look at an AA study which has found that 71% of men think they have the best sense of direction on the road. So is that possibly true? Obviously, I think if you ask men what they think, or women indeed, they believe that to be the case. But we have an expert female motorist journalist coming on, a regular contributor to the programme indeed, Geraldine Herbert, a motoring journalist with Wheels for Women. I think my nose is a little bit blocked. She'll be coming on very shortly to discuss that with us and the rights of wrongs of that AA survey. Your requests are coming in thick and fast. I will get to them as soon as we get some live music now. And I think the guys have tuned up. So, Gabriel, you ready to take it away?
Yeah, no way.
Go ahead, guys.
No way. This is My Fella the Undertaker.
Stop the swinging in my head. Stay close. said, now in Rathmull and Gravelander. Would he have guessed at the age of 17 he'd make a living from selling ice cream? Now his soul has been set free. He was dressed with a little chicken to meet.
Alright, that's an absolutely beautiful sound there, guys. For just the three of you, sound like much more. Well done. Right, the second song for us, Gabriel, what is it?
It's La Morgue, and it's about, as I said earlier, sort of seeing two people who've never really met in life, but sort of met then in death.
Alright, take it away when you're ready.
Better tune fast, Connell needs to get to work.
I was going to say, you better tune fast, I need to get on with this program. Oh, I wish you'd choose two songs in the same key. I'm only messing. All right, take it away, guys.
There's the mark.
Patrick McBride. Staring at the ceiling without anything else left to say. And I walk past his weeping family to carry him home. But his body had been cleansed beside a woman he had never known. Makes me think does everybody die the same way? 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 Ba-dum, ba-dum, bum. Ba-dum, ba-da-ba-bum. Ba-dum, ba-dum, bum. Ba-dum, ba-da-ba-bum. My feet stuck to the floor. As I lay her in her bed and shut the hospital door. And the nurse said that no one was coming to see her before we closed. The length of fragile timber over her little nose makes me think. Does everybody die the same way? 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 My mother's stomach, skin wrapped to her bones. Her face looks all different. There's something wrong with my home. Makes me the same way. Nobody dies the same way. Nobody dies the same way. Nobody dies the same way.
Absolutely superb. That's Gabriel Pascal Blake on guitar vocals, Conal Doherty in bass, and Gary Hamilton on drums, collectively known as Four Foresters. Guys, thank you so much for coming in studio today.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Bye. Now, those little stirrers at the AA have done a survey on what sex thinks they're the best at, or have the best sense of direction on the road, and 71% of men think they have. Geraldine Herbert is a motoring journalist with the excellent Wheels for Women. She joins us on the programme now. Geraldine, good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Very, very good. Now, I suppose we shouldn't be too surprised at the findings of this. I suppose if you ask a certain sex certain questions, they're going to rate themselves higher. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think this is just a hilarious. I mean, two out of 2,000 people, like, it's a fairly staggering number. 70% of men, not only do they think that they're better at navigating than their partners, but they're better at driving as well.
Maybe it just points to an incredibly sexist society that we live in.
I suppose the direction thing is always one of these contentious issues, but I think men, you know, this is a gross generalisation, but my own experiences, men tend to be to rate themselves a little higher at most things, whereas women tend to underestimate themselves. I think that comes to play. But I also think, I mean, I know lots of female navigators who are brilliant and the ones that are awful, and I know men who just, you know, can't make head or tail out of the map, so I don't think it's an exclusive, you know, male or female trait by any means.
Yeah, and as I say, it might be more reflected on society. 71% of men believed they were to be had the best sense of direction, and women were 42%, so they were certainly more realistic, perhaps, about it, in that it's probably 50-50. Depends on the person, not their sex.
Absolutely. I mean, biologically, a good sense of direction is apparently based on your ability to take advantage of environmental clues. So what skilled navigators do is they're actually able to mentally update, based on geographical things, their actual position by keeping track of, you know, visual evidence. So there's nothing to suggest that that's a male or female trait. And I'd say, with our reliance on technology, particularly sat-navs now on our phones and in our cars, probably our sense of direction is going to go out the window for most people anyway. We're going to just rely so much on technology. It probably will get worse over time for both sexes.
Yes, but you see, the problem is I believe, and we've seen it quite tragically, actually, on a very serious note, with certain roads that have been closed and sat-navs haven't been updated. There is an over-reliance on sat-navs sometimes.
Oh, absolutely, and it's crucial that you update them. And if you don't, as you say, you know, they can send you completely astray. But it's amazing how just how common sat-navs are now, and how especially younger generation are just relying solely on them. And the idea of actually picking up a map is completely alien, or actually the ability to read a map. You know, I know even for myself, going on press trips, on international press trips, years ago you would get off the plane, you'd be handed a map book, and you'd team up with somebody else. You know, you'd navigate, they'd drive, and then you'd swap. Now you just get into a car, plug in the coordinates into a sat-nav, and don't even think about where you are.
Is that good or bad, though?
I think it's probably quite bad, in the sense that, you know, this, as I said, the whole idea of a sense of a direction is based on just being able to tell where you are, that if, you know, where you're driving, that if you're beside the river, whatever, cross over there, you know, just having a sense of where you're going. You're going to lose that completely if you're relying on technology.
What I like to do is use the sat-nav for guidance rather than the absolute, be-all and end-all of driving.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I'm quite lazy and do rely quite heavily on technology and sat-navs. But having said that, you know, if they're sending me astray, I'm going to say to myself, no, hang on, that isn't right. You do hear these most hilarious stories of people who turn into rivers and all sorts, because it said, you know, my sat-nav said turn right in 300 metres and I did that.
I ended up on a forestry road. There was a road closure and I trusted my sat-nav. Well, it was Google Maps it was using. And ended up, like, my car was stuck up the back of Barnesmore Gap. I'm contradicting myself. I took it too literally. You have to use common sense.
But that could be a male thing as well, because you see, men just do not ask for help and they just don't ask for directions. I think that's.
I was being so nice, Geraldine. Now you're pitching. You are pitching the sexes against each other. But you are right. I was afraid to ask, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm as bad. I will stubbornly drive 10, you know, kilometres out of my way rather than ask directions. But generally speaking, I think women are better at saying, do you know something, I'm lost, can you get me out of here? Whereas men will just keep going, even if they have to rely on the sat-nav that isn't actually going to get them there, you know.
Do you think it's because men see it as a sign of weakness to ask for help then?
Probably, yeah. Or else, you know, again, it's that thing, you know, men don't ask for directions, so they're not going to be the one that changes that, or they're not going to be the one to break with tradition, so...
I'm going to put you on the spot now. Who do you believe, what drivers have the better sense of direction, men or women?
I don't believe it comes down, you see, I don't believe it's a biological thing. I think some women are great at finding their way and some are terrible, and it's the same with men.
Okay, come here. Reflecting on the motor industry broadly, what are we in a good state at the moment?
We definitely are. In fact, the July figures, the CSO figures were out last week, and they're always an interesting one because they're the actual cars that have been taxed. So they're cars that have been bought by people and taxed and put on the road, rather than the Society of the Motor Industry. What their figures reflect are the amount of sales that dealerships are quoting. So the CSO is always a very accurate one, and they're just under the 100,000 mark. So, I mean, that's the highest we've seen since 2008.
Which is good. And we're just... Are we still in the cycle of the second month of registration, or are all eyes on January now?
No, we wouldn't expect to see a huge number of sales. I think about 11 to 12,000 were sold between about August and December of last year, so not huge. But if it's up to 25%, which it has been, or nearly 30% this year, you still will probably see 15, 16,000 cars sold by the end of the year, which will bring the figure to about 120, depending on which figures you're going on. But, I mean, they're very healthy figures. But I'd say the motor industry have their eyes set on 161 at this stage.
OK. Now, tell us before you go, Geraldine, where people can hear more from you. Or they can go on the website, Wheels for Women?
Wheelsforwomen.ie, or I also am motoring correspondent with the Sunday Independent.
And a regular contributor to Today FM, I too believe as well.
Take care, the last word.
Excellent. Well done. Thank you so much, as always, Geraldine.
Thank you, Greg.
Great to speak to you. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Scarlett Russell's a freelance journalist and joins us on the programme. Hi, Scarlett.
Hi, Greg.
Very good. I love your name. Were you named after Scarlett O'Hara?
I think there was a bit of influence there. Also, Scarlett Riviera. I don't know if you know her. She was a musician back in the 70s.
Right, so yeah, a mixture of the two.
A mixture of the two, yeah.
Now, coupledom is becoming a thing of the past, Scarlett, is it? We're becoming so frivolous.
No, I don't think that's... I think certainly coupledom isn't what it used to be. I think certainly culture's changed massively, the whole dating culture, the whole relationship culture. I think generally people are just settling down much later. There's not so much a need now to settle down as young as we used to, because, you know, it used to be in the older generations, you'd get married, you'd move out of your house straight into the house of whoever you were marrying, and that was it, you'd stay with them. It's completely different now. There are so many more options for people, so there's not actually the need for them to settle down quite as young, so people are just doing it later.
And there's not a lot need for them to leave the house in the first instance, because people are using apps like Tinder or Grindr, depending on your orientation. They're also using Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat. A lot of connections are being made there, but they're perhaps not long connections. People are just meeting up for a night out, brief relationship, and then back on the apps.
Well, I think that is it. And I think, yes, there's no doubt that certainly social media, the internet in general, has played a massive part in this shift in dating. It's so much easier to meet people now. It used to be we'd meet them through friends, family, at work, maybe out and about. Now you can just go online and meet instantly hundreds of dates or friends or business contacts or whatever. And it's a really brilliant way of people.
It's so lazy.
Meet.
What about sitting me? You're on one end of the bar, Scarlett, I'm on the other. You throw me a look, or I throw you a look, and I say to the barman, get that lady a drink.
Well, I think that's a very lovely idea. I think...
that's all it is an idea, isn't it?
Well, I'd like to think that still happens. I'm afraid, especially in London, I mean, it just... And the very busy cities, Dublin as well, it just doesn't really happen like that anymore. I think, actually, the good thing about all these apps is that a lot of people are meeting people that they wouldn't elsewhere. I know plenty of couples have got together through Tinder. I know plenty of people who've made friends through Twitter and found jobs through LinkedIn. You know, it works on... so many different platforms.
Maybe it just gets rid of the small talk at the beginning, you know, the feeling out process, so that when you do finally meet, you know, you know the basics.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there is an element of small talk, but I think it's easier to maybe do that, you know, there's a lot more pressure to do that in person, whereas if you're just doing it over an app, over text, there's not quite so much pressure. So I think it's actually helping a lot of people. On the flip side, of course, it is no doubt contributing to this culture of throwaway dating, if you like, where you're not really that committed. It's quite easy to, you know, toss someone aside because that you're just not interested anymore. There's no emotional commitment.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
That early on.
That's heartbreaking.
It is quite sad. I don't know. I think it's the way things are, really. And I think if it's not for Tinder, I mean, Tinder will be outdated in a few years in the same way that Match.com is now.
Yeah.
There will be another way. There will be something else soon. The novelty will wear off.
And dating websites are huge. Plenty of Fish and all those type of ones. They're massive at the moment.
They're not as big as they used to be,
right,
Greg.
Okay.
I mean, it used to be that was the only way to meet, but now it's all about apps. I think this is the way things are. I mean, it's not even some, you know, in New York, where all these apps started, Tinder's not even really as big there anymore. They're all on Happn. That's the next latest one. So there's always going to be something else. There's always going to be a new way of people to meet. I mean, it's just the way it is now.
That and that's Happn, is it? Yes.
That's the one, yeah. There's also Hinge, Coffee Meets Bagel. Oh, there's hundreds of them.
Okay, right. Well, I must download a few. Listen, Scarlett, thanks so much for coming on the program. I wish we had more time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Lovely to chat to you. Right, next on the programme, we read that it's goodbye hipsters, hello yuckies. That's young urban creatives for those that do not know. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line now by Holly Shortall, fashion illustrator and Indo-style contributor. Holly, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you?
I'm doing well. We know hipsters dot our landscape, but for those who may not know what that image is, describe it for us.
Sorry, the hipster image?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's kind of, I suppose people who, I have to be so careful, you say, I don't want to offend anybody. I guess people who, you know, people, men that have beards, that kind of became a big hipster thing.
People that wear glasses that have clear
that
glass in them.
Glasses. I think to me, a hipster, it was all about the look, okay? So it wasn't necessarily about what they were doing per se or what they were working at. It was all about how they looked, exactly like you said. This idea of kind of maybe wearing things that are like clearly not, you know, very not gorgeous, trendy, fashionable things, you know what I mean? Exactly like you said, wearing big, massive kind of old lady glasses or socks and sandals, you know, all these faux pas.
I think what's happened, yeah, though, is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong because you're far more fashionable than I am, it was a way of standing out and being a little different. And I think the broader culture, broader fashion has perhaps incorporated the hipster look to some extent. And if you want to stand out, you're going to have to try something different, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even, you know, obviously, any kind of group of people often think, throughout the years, there's been alternative kind of types of people who think on the outset that they're very individual. I mean, if you look at the punks in the 70s, you know, they all thought they were individual, but they were all wearing the leather jackets with the studs. They all had the mohawks. So that's kind of always been the same. So I think you might have had a situation where there was kind of a couple of these, you know, quote-unquote hipster people, but, you know, then it became just another trend. And I think the difference between the hipsters and, say, the yuppies is that it's not really about how, you know, the young urban creatives dress. It's what they're doing. And I think that's the difference.
I would consider myself to be at the cutting edge of fashion and very much in touch with the youth. But believe it or not, I've not heard of yuppies. What are they?
Well, I haven't heard about it either until I was asked to do the interview. But if it had been, you know, here's the new hipsters, here's some hipsters, I wouldn't have done it. But yeah, like, it's a young urban creative. It's, you know, people who are, you know, aged, I think it's between about 20 and 35, who are not necessarily, you know, sitting at a desk working for somebody else, you know, and working 9 to 5 or whatever it is. They're just kind of doing their own thing while they're in a position that they can. For me, I've no kids, I've no mortgage. I don't even drive at the moment. So for me, I think that's kind of where I fit in. This is, you know, what I can only do this now, probably.
And I think, and it can be said of hipsters too, it is almost a lifestyle. Perhaps, you know, people of that group would have shared political interests or shared things that they campaign on. It's not necessarily just about what clothes you wear. And I think perhaps when you start pigeonholing people in just the items of clothes that they wear, that's when you get the bit of a backlash.
Yeah, like, absolutely. But I do think that the term hipster is, you know, derogatory. You know, I don't think it was ever used in a nice way to, you know, describe some great person and, you know, what political stance they had or whatever. It was literally, in my eyes, it was not ever used in a nice way. It was somebody basically saying to somebody else, you think that you're better than me for X, Y, Z reason. So I think in that respect, I don't, you know, maybe it did have something to do with political groups or whatever, but I don't think so. But yeah.
Okay, let's stick to the cloth then. What are people wearing this summer? If the young guy has a lot of beards around for guys, you know, the shirt buttoned up to the top, a lot of women are going for this HD eyebrow situation. Are these... Is that national or just in the Northwest?
No, I think that's, you know, trends are trends and they kind of, they filter down and they're everywhere. I mean, I
do you have HD eyebrows, Holly?
Well, I don't. I have my own. I just do my own with a pencil.
Okay.
I'm a struggling artiste. I have no money. I can't be affording €100 a month to get my eyebrows done. I do them myself. DIY HD brows. I don't know. I'm not. I honestly, I don't really follow big trends. I don't really, you know what's in.
But you see, I think that's what the new fashionable is. You know, where you show a bit of yourself, you express your personality through your clothes and the way you hold yourself. That's why I think, you know, people are less inclined to want, as I said earlier, less inclined to want to be pigeonholed in a certain style or that.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Okay, Holly, thanks very much for that. That is where we have to leave it this Saturday morning. Thank you to everyone who contributed to the programme, especially you listening at home, at work or wherever you are. Don't forget, if you missed any of the programme, it will be available for you online once again at highlandradio.com. Thank you very much, of course, to Yvonne McFadden, who did a superb job, as always, in putting the show together. Stay tuned. P.O. McCann's on the way. He's on an outside broadcast. He'll be chatting to you in about 3 or 4 minutes. Donald Kavanagh is up next with the news. Have a fantastic weekend.